events that it is one of the most unjust wars that has ever been fought in the history of the world.
Welcome back to Light on Conspiracies, the second part for subscribers only.
My very special guest, Conny Andersson, and we've had, I would say, really a very, very interesting first hour. And maybe, Conny, if you would like just to recap what we went through in the first hour.
Yes, okay. Born and live in Sweden, Stockholm. Joined the police force 91 till 94, during the education, 3 years. Then early, like 95, finding out that organized crime was a really severe problem in Stockholm. And I was really engaged to find out the reason why the mafia was so large and also could go under the surface, under the radar. My job was like going deep into this and finding the evidence. And we start to make the mafia organized crime to crack because we found so much detail. We start observing the mafia. And directly, we got threatened. Later on, my boss at the police station, he ordered me to go away, turn my head from this really profound, deep problem we have in society of the organized crime. But I didn't back down. I continued to work against the mafia. And later on, we got a new colleague from the city police, and he was also a friend to my boss, to my chief, who ordered me to stop chasing the mafia. When I was arresting his son and his friends, who belonged to this mafia, this new colleague called him SS, that's his name, actually, and he's also engaged to this Nazi movement also, actually. He started to attack me and make complaints, and the investigation started to be with his friend, a prosecutor, and that led to a trial, and I was free from that trial, of course. I didn't do anything. It was an effort from them to stop me from chasing this organized crime, who also led to this college, SS. So now we are in that moment that I was free from this attack from inside the police, from the colleague and from this prosecutor, who is also a good friend to this SS.
Well, what was the exact accusation?
Well, the accusation was that I had been using too much violence when I was arresting this group, and I hadn't any right to do that.
Had you?
Yes, I had the right. Because,
no, but had you used a lot of violence when you did these arrests?
No. I did this in a balanced way. The situation was like, I saw this criminal gang. When we come closer, they have motorcycles, and one of the motorcycles has just gone away, and we were going after that. And in an area where he was like stopped, it was like a return. So my colleague went out. Yeah, he couldn't go anyway. So my colleague went up from the police car, go. And he would go to arrest this man he was suspected of stealing this motorcycle, and also that he could be drunk. So this motorcycle person with the same helmet, we didn't see who it was driving towards my colleague and tried to hit him, actually. But and my colleague was jumping to the side, so he was not hit. So this motorcycle ran away, and I found him later on up in the open field when I was driving after him. So I was driving after him and I ordered him to stop, but he didn't. So I was like going side by side. As long as he was driving that speed, it was too dangerous to make this speed maneuver, fishtail maneuver. So I was waiting for the right moment. And that moment came in the end of this field. So he stopped and turned sharp to the right. So he was in no speed at all. So I just come out to my with my car, went and bumped to his back wheel of the motorcycle. So he just tipped over and fall with the no speed at all. And then I arrested him. So they accused me of, I don't know, it's called like aggravated assault or something like that. But it is a common technique that we use as a policeman. If you have a car thief or whatever, you do this big maneuver and you stop them. And there were no injuries of this person. And then he did resistance violence. He tried to run away, of course. So I put the handcuffs on him. And then we investigated who he was. And he was like the gangs of this mafia, this tail, the young teenager wannabe gangs.
But was this the actual son of SS?
This was the best friend of the son of SS. So he was often in SS home. And they had have suspicious of earlier stealing motorcycles, and they have also been found using marijuana ashes. And he was like 15, 16 years old. So he was clearly a wannabe criminal into this mafia gang. Mm. So they continued. Because I was like free, I continued to work against this mafia. So they continued to appeal for the next court. So this prosecutor, a friend of SS, he opened up the case again. He wanted to try on another level to get me judged for this. And he went out in the national television and radios. The first pages on the biggest newspapers, and he said to us like, you can't make a complaint on policemen, they are putting themselves together, you know. And he was actually talking about SS, you know, that's what they did. I don't do that, but they did it. So they are projecting themselves to my job. So the next court was coming, and during that time, other bosses, they put me in the darkness. You know, I have to do inner jobs, like making investigations and things like that, because they wanted to show that they did something about this terrible policeman, you know. And during that time, I was like grounded. It was really painful for me because I know I haven't done anything bad. I was doing my job and I was doing a good job. I was bringing down the mafia. And I had this balance of giving and, you know, stopping and putting the borders. So, you know, finally the second court came and I was like, wow, now it's done. You know, it will not be anything more after that. This second court will just confirm that I'm right. And that court was doing the opposite. They charged me with like 6 points, and they wanted to put me in jail. I was totally shocked. I couldn't think that this society would be so corrupted that you could buy a court on a second level in Sweden to put me in jail for that. I was a policeman doing my job and arresting mafia. Like, and that was a completely shock for me. That was so painful. So during that time aftermath, I was like in trauma, actually. So the next step was like the leader of the national police, His name is Sten Heckscher. He's a well-known, skilled judge. And he used to be also a teacher of justice in the University of Stockholm. They gather every year to make decisions if a policeman could be still in the police, or they have to be fired. You know. And they call it Ansvarsnämnden. It's a kind of our own court to judge if you are if you have the trust to continue to be a policeman. And what I've heard from all the police and from the union also, that you will get fired. You know, they have already decided you will get fired. You will have no chance. So I was just walking up there with my lawyer and just like going to be hanged. It felt like that. My career was over. You know, I've been fighting the mafia outside, and now I'm fighting the mafia inside, and I lost. You know, so I went out to this kind of court with the highest police chiefs in Sweden, and I talked from my heart what happened, and they said, "Well, now we have to think. Come back here in 10 minutes." And they were like discussing, and when I came back, he said, the leader, Sten Heckscher, the leader of the National Police, he said, "You will keep your job. We have, and we will continue." And I was like, "What?" So he changed, actually. Sten Heckscher saved my career because he saw something. I'm convinced of that, because he has a long political career also. His father were a politician in Sweden. He had all the ties in the Social Democratic Party in Sweden also. And he usually called the black sheep of the family. So I think he saw, and he was brave, and he knows that this is a corruption case who have been attacked.
I tell you, very often when there are cases like this, when somebody is very obviously innocent, mm-hmm. and then judged and sentenced anyway, very often you can find that the judges or the DA, often the attorney as well, many of them are Freemasons and connected yes. Behind the scenes that you cannot see. Did you have any traces of that in your case as yes, well?
Absolutely. SS, he's a military officer, and the prosecutor is also a military officer. So they have been doing a mission abroad in Lebanon and Cyprus together. So this military connection with each other. And also there is one of the same gang from the city police that SS were in the baseball league. He is also a judge in the second court, and he's the one who's called the Kurima Manen.
Oi.
You see? Yeah. Anti Avsan or something.
Anti Avsan, he's...
Yeah, he's sitting in the second court. And he was not the judge in my trial, but he's working there. So I suppose that they are connecting dots.
Just for the listeners' information, this is a man who is part of baseball league, and his name is Antti Avsan.
Yes.
He has been pointed out by witnesses on location just a few minutes before the shots were fired, on the exact location where the murderer is said to have been standing before the shooting. Identified, he has been approached with this thing through different books. I've been naming him for years and years and years, even speaking directly to camera, as I can do now. I say, please stand forward, step forward, and explain yourself what you were doing this evening. I do not see him as the shooter, but I know he was part of the gang that was involved in this attack on the Swedish Prime Minister. And I think it's very, very disturbing that someone who has publicly been pointing out as part of the assassination of the prime minister of a country is then having a career as a judge on a high level, as well as a top politician in Sweden. It's like, really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
And so this is just another sign of this inner corruption that you are. And for me, it's like, I mean, if my mind, my brain wants to melt sometimes when I see him on TV, standing there talking about, well, we have to do this about youth brutality or violence. And I'm like, but who are you? You know? Also, he's involved. I believe he was the last one to be seen together with a prostitute called Catarina da Costa, who was later found chopped up in pieces in plastic bags, making part of another major scandal in Sweden that has not really been exposed either.
So,
once again, what is a person like that doing as a judge and involved in cases like this where their former colleagues in the same small grouping of right-wing extremists with a very violent background smells not very nice, I would say.
No, and they are friends with SS, and they are still having these ties together. So when they leave, they're helping each other, scratching each other's back.
But this is
close.
This is, I mean, with this baseball game we're talking about, it was only a group of like 8 to 10 people, and they were in all the key positions this very evening when the Swedish prime minister was taken out. Only that evening were they there, and they were in all the key positions, including radio, alarm central, ambulances, the first vehicles on locations, the people chasing the murderer, all of it, these people.
Exactly.
And then afterwards, they were bodyguards of the Hans Holmér, who is the first investigator of this crime, who was also, Hans Holmér was the former chief of the secret police in Sweden, and also the one who initiated the baseball gang a few years before the assassination. I mean, it's like, you cannot believe when you get into this labyrinth, it's like, oh, come on, who's writing this crap? It's too bad to be true. Unfortunately, he's not. And you were right in there scratching in this dirt. I'll say you ended up in the belly of the beast in this area. So I'm very happy to see that you're okay on the other side, because a lot of people have not ended up in balance, I tell you.
And it was so painful for me, and I got on like depression, felt really vulnerable, and you know, it was a time during this really rough years, because the prosecution and investigation, it would take not 1 week, 2 years. You know, we're just waiting, and somebody is pulling the strings, and you nobody listening to you. And my colleagues were backing up because they were getting afraid. They know I'm a good guy, I'm an honest guy, and a good policeman, and they was like shocked. How can you, Conor, who is a good policeman, honest, how can you be accused for this and also be judged in a second court? They couldn't believe it. So they it was too much for them. So they just took the decision to turn their heads from it, because they wanted to be effective on it. So my case just show that anyone could be caught and judged in a court. Doesn't matter if you have done any crime or not, you can be judged anyway. So that was a really terrible experience, but also a really developing. And that's what I see today. Thank God that I have this opportunity to develop myself as a human by these events.
I call them.
And since Sten Hetcher, the national police chief, he saved my career because he saw something there. He saw something really corrupt. And he asked me, since you can continue to work as a policeman, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I know that I have corrupt policemen after me. So I I need to protect myself. I want to work with education. I love education. I want to share my experience with the new policemen. And I said, wow, that's a good idea. So I started to work as a teacher at the police academy. I was teaching tactics, pistol shooting, and different subjects about law and things like that. So during 2 years, I was working there, and I got very successful. And people really liked me, and I loved my students, and I gave them a lot of love for the job. And during that time, I also saw a lot of students start to actually conforming to be accepted as a policeman. They start to, you know, changing their clothing, cutting down their hair, you know, like you asked me in the beginning of this interview, what is the culture, you know? And they just felt they had to do this to change, to conform to be accepted. And I said to them, why do you change? I said to my student, don't you change, be yourself. Well, I would love to, but it's better this way. No, it's not better this way. I said that. Well, be yourself, you are getting confident and secure and loving. Because when you start to claim that you're not, you will be insecure. And that's not a good policeman. So I was looking at myself in the mirror and saw a shortcut policeman. I was thinking, no, I will start to have a long hair. So therefore, from that time, I had this long hair. So I was almost the only policeman in police that had this long hair. And it provoked some people, of course. Mm-hmm. I just do it.
but this also started taking you into a different path in your life, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And during this time, I continued to warn about this SS because he was still flying under the radar. In police academy, I start to talk to Leif G.W. Persson, a well-known writer here in Sweden, and he'd be also been writing books about this baseball gang. And it's like, what? He? And he said, like, of course you know he's lying. Yes, I know he's lying, but people don't want to believe me. That's the problem. And he was really, really upset that people in the surrounding just accepted this unjust what happened to me. And during this time when I was out there in police school and I got a good career, so I get higher rank also. One day SS came out to police academy. It's like, when I saw him, I know this is bad. I saw his eye and he just hated me, especially now, since after his effort to get rid of me from the police work, have actually got me better in career. So I was now higher in
the ranks.
In ranks than he was.
Oy.
And he just like got crazy. But he didn't show that, but I saw that. When I saw him, I just turned my head away and go away. And weeks after, I got another complaint from him that he said that I had been threatening him to life. It was an obvious lie, of course, but and in the same matter as what they do, they're using the media, what they call today fake media or this propaganda media, mainstream media. They use them, so they start to be first on the newspapers. This policeman now has threatened again, so it become a new trial, of course. And I got one of the most famous attorney here in Sweden. Sibarski is called. Leif Sibarski, one of the most famous. He said, well, Conny, you haven't done anything, so this will be no problem, he said. And I said, don't you minimize this, because I know what forces it is behind this. I said, oh, this is ridiculous. This was like, ha, ha, ha. And of course, I went to the court and they got me by a small charge, but anyway, I got another judged.
A sentence.
Sentence, again. And I said, well, you see. I said to him, Sebastian, you see, there is a deep corruption in this society. And he was like shocked. He still is just like, no, this is not even a crime. Yes, I know. So what happened then? The second time I got sentenced, I got another good career. Finally, I got my, you see, you have to laugh about this because it's crazy. There's two ways. You can be depressed and go under, or you can laugh at it. Like the story I told about the three guys who were standing there and I was going to die and they were also going to die. And you can find the humor in all about it. So what happened after this second trial and sentence? I got finally my job back again. Out on the street as a street cop. I just love to be out in the street and play this theater on the street, meeting people for real and changing the society for good, for the good. So I started patrolling again, and this was 2003. And there they have a special course called visual tracking. And during the time when I was attacked by the mafia, I was like really wondering, how could it be that our plain senses could be so effective in police work? Because we didn't have any advanced equipment. We use only our body, our senses, sharp senses, eyes, ears, and feeling, and intuition. I was really fascinated by that, that we could be so effective to crush the mafia. So I started to read books about tracking the Native Americans, for example, and all the natives around the world. The oldest science and art to gather information to understand what is happening. So they have actually a course in 2003 in that police station, and I was like, oh, I remember this. This is why I'm going through all of this. It is about the tracking, about seeing the truth. So I did this 2-day course. And I decided 2003, this is what I'm going to be. I will be the best tracker in the world. But I will start with Sweden first, of course. So I decided 2003 to be as good as you possibly can to be a tracker, to know by your own senses. And I started to every day when I was working as a street cop, using my sharply, and I was like investigating always under the surface, and I started to also communicate, sharing information with the archaeological society. So I was on historical sites, you know, looking for like the Stone Age and things like that. I was also with this ranger activity we have in Sweden. It's not actually a rangers, but it's kind of an authority looking out for the nature, especially the wolves here in Sweden, who is attacked by so much poaching. We have a terrible situation here in Sweden, where the most common death for wolves, bears, and wolverine lynxes are poaching. It's terrible. And actually, that's another mafia that I've been investigating. This hunter lobby mafia that we have in Sweden is really, really terrible. So during these years from 2003, I just followed the path of the tracker. And the high chief in Stockholm, Karin Götblad, she liked my passionate work against the mafia with my senses on the knowing. So I got the scholarship, and I used that scholarship to go to the U.S. and learn the Apache way with Tom Brown. And I went there 3 times to get the basic knowledge about understanding life, the world, the situations, places by your own senses.
Yeah, because the Apache tribe were the tribe, the best scouts and trackers ever, I think. At least in the U.S., among the native tribes, they were famous for their way of both tracking and also disappearing and not being visible at all.
It is amazing skills that they did develop. And the knowledge I got from my teacher is just amazing. You have to do the dirt time, as you said. You have to practice. But they are so profound, those skills. And 2 years ago, I was in Africa to help the rangers in Zimbabwe to protect the rhinos against poaching. And in Africa, the rangers is one of the best trackers you can find in the world. And I was tracking with them and also gave a shorter introduction of man tracking. And with my skill from the Apaches, I was actually giving the African trackers some new skills that they didn't have. So I'm really honored of that skill. And it's actually the best, you know, I shared my knowledge with different trackers, and the Apaches is really, really awesome. Mm. Really high tech. Yes. I would love to spread this all over the world. I think that would be the most basic skills for all children in school should learn this, because it's about trusting your senses, only knowing by your own senses. Like you will, you're trusting your own senses and confirming and excluding, never assuming knowing by your own senses, only to know. So that's taking back the right to know, and not letting us to be seduced by scientists or the experts, taking back our own right to know.
Yeah, because
my experience. Yes.
No, because I think most people, when you talk about tracking, they would see that, okay, track footprints in the desert or in the snow or something like that. But you're talking about this on a totally different level, aren't you?
Absolutely. A track is for me a movement that you can detect with all your senses. It could be something you see, a movement with the sea, it's like a movement of light, movement of sound, smell, touch, or intuition. As long as there is a movement, that's a track. So everything is actually a track. The building is a track of the workers who built it, but it's also a track from the person who had decided the construction. It is always an intention between every movement. So a building with thousands of movements, every nail, every window, every draw with the pencil, when you put the color on the walls, or every movement, it is an intention. It is a meaningful movement. So what I see when I'm tracking people, I see the movement timely when you, like, now you're moving your shoulders, you're tensing the muscle, it's a muscle, it's a movement. And I just follow, like what you do, Ole, following the dots through the whole body. But I also listen where the sound is coming. Is it coming from the stomach or the chest, heart area, or the throat area, the mouth area? What is the intention? What is the speed of the talk? Is it a hesitation? What is the frequency? So all those details I put to a context, and the context gives me a meaning.
I thought it was really interesting. One time you told me about how important it is sometimes not to track when you're tracking. And
exactly.
Like you told me that there was this industrial area and there was this burglar or guy who ran in and was hiding in there. Maybe you can tell how you got him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, especially when lack of tracks is getting you confused. And often we get confused because we are such in a hurry. We are chasing, we are hunting, you know. And to be a really good tracker, you don't hunt. You're standing still and you open up. It's like yoga or qigong or something. Really really profound. You have to take in. You can only see and hear your surroundings if you look inside, because the sound have to come into your ears, the light have to come into your eyes. So therefore, this person in this industrial area just disappearing. I need tracks. I need information. So I'm standing still in the darkness, just waiting, because I know somewhere is he. Where is he not, and where is he? Just waiting there. So waiting, and I know if he had to move, that would make sounds. So I'm waiting there for 20 minutes, and after 20 minutes, it's like, crap, got it. And I've done it so many times. For example, we had this job. It was a person with an iron pipe going smashing cars. And I was like, wow, we go and get him, me and my colleague. And we went up and I saw him on a distance of 200 meters. And then he saw us and he just disappeared. And we went up there and it was too late. He was gone. So we were looking for him. And then after a while, he was on the same place. It's like he was playing hide and seek with us. So we went up again to the same place where I saw him last time. And I turned off the car and said, okay, let's do hide and seek, I was thinking. And I went out the police car and shut everything down. So it was completely silent. It was like 1 o'clock in the night, you know, everybody was sleeping. It was up in the suburbs and there was like bushes there. There were like a big house there where cars parking around. And I was just standing there because I know if there is someone there, they will make a noise. So I was standing there, waiting 10 minutes, 50 minutes, and that's crack. 5 meters from me into the bush on the ground, he was lying. And I just ordered him to come out, and he was coming out and looked a little bit ashamed, like a small boy doing bad things. So just by using the body, that this beautiful sensitive body that knows so much.
But also what I really like when you say is that to find out where it is not.
Exactly.
That is just as important as where it is.
So excluding, confirming is the same importance. That's what I did also with the helicopter robbery also. Excluding and confirming where the robbers have left, you know. By doing this square search around the helicopter. It was this big, huge robbery in 2009, and then I've become the police expert of tracking, and they used me to in all types of criminal investigations. And when they found this helicopter was stolen, because they have been in a big money depot, they have stolen millions of kronor. They found the stolen helicopter out in the woods. And then with this special SWAT team and with the dog training, dog unit, they couldn't find where the robbers had went. So they asked me. So I start tracking with a square around the helicopter to find where has they gone and where has they not gone. So doing this square around the helicopter, I can exclude and confirm each of these four lines. So directly I can exclude one line, exclude it. Next line, I can confirm two people out. And the other two, I can exclude. So I know them just after 10 minutes. People have gone this way and they have not come back. And shortly I found glasses, what I think was the pilot's glasses, and I couldn't exclude that no money was dropped or weapon was dropped in the runaway track. So the prosecutor finally later on wanted me to guide where I found and saw, and that will later on fit to the whole picture in the court.
Do you know, I remember you invited me as a speaker at your anniversary, for the trackers, which was amazing for me to be welcomed in Sweden, because it's been like I've been stonewalled there for so many years, more or less. I mean, nobody has listened. And I just want to say, a few weeks ago, a book was published here in Sweden about the Palme assassination, totally backing me in every step of the way. So it's really amazing after all of it. It's only 30 years, but what can you do?
Exactly.
But anyway.
That's the truth. You have been attacking the lies with the truth. So that's...
Yeah, and for me, when you invited me for one of your workshops, and I found that extremely interesting, because I thought, okay, a few tracks here and there in the on the ground, but it was so much more, and it was so much more about using the senses, even the smell, that you can actually smell a track. I couldn't believe my nose when you told me lie down. I mean, the group was more or less blindfolded or on their knees crawling around finding tracks and just opening up for the senses, and I mean, that just blew me away. And you said that there are even some of the best trackers can even smell a track like 10, 15 meters away.
Oh yeah, 100 meters.
Well, I would
absolutely be. Yes, you know. What happened with your body when you start training and really believe your body, and really to let your body and senses be responsible, then the body will react on that that mission. You know, it start to be really honest and start to make you aware of smells, sights, hearing, things like that. And you know, sometimes when out and tracking, I can just feel the smell of humans, and I get almost like surprised of my own reaction, because it's my body says humans, and I was thinking like these orcs of the ring of the lords or something like, and it's possible, you know, it's like, and just a few meters later, hundreds of meters away, a person coming up. It's like, wow, we have this ability, and nose is really underestimated as a census, you know, during so many years as a policeman, often coming to homes, opening the door, it will be a drag from the air inside the home. I often felt the same smell. It was a smell of fear and aggression, you know. And I started collecting those experiences. So every time I went into a home with violence, it just like was sniffing from that sensation. Is it dangerous? Is it violence in here? Is it fear? And that's natural. All animals are doing that. They're sending out odor as an information. If you hate somebody, if you love somebody. So it's natural. And it's a need to do that.
I tell you, I think you're some kind of reincarnated from a wolf tribe or something like that. I really feel that. I mean, I was well impressed by your nose and the way you could sense things.
Thank you. And we all have it, actually. When we start to really embrace our own, the whole system, you know, a really advanced body, we have a superhuman body that's just like waiting, who is asleep, but as soon as we start to give its mission to find out, it would just be happy. And it is an adventure of investigation. I love to investigate, you know, and I love to have an impossible mission. You know, that's triggering me really much. Yes, absolutely. So I got this... this special training in US, and I'm practicing, you know, as a policeman for many years. And in 2009, I was helping the investigation of the helicopter robbery. And 2010, for me, 20 years as a policeman, I felt now it's time for me to leave, because I need to do something else. I need to embrace the tracking. There were no tracking in Sweden, almost nothing in the whole world, and it wasn't. So I started my company, and I working full time. And 1 year later, 2011, I have to take a decision if I would continue with my company with tracking or go back to police work. And I took this decision, I will continue with tracking full time with my Tracker School Sweden. And you know, it's kind of magic because I think everything have a reason. Mm-hmm. And the challenge that I was experienced about the mafia happened also 2011, because when I decided to leave policeman, I got information about SS, that he was arrested. And shortly after, I could see on the front pages in Sweden, a policeman is arrested. Policeman arrested. You know, it's like, could it be? I was thinking, it could be that he will finally be caught. And I was talking to another colleague, and he said, you know, you see this front side of the newspapers. You know who it is? No. It is SS. What it is? So the same time, I quit my job as policeman. SS was arrested, and he been raping kids, boys and girls. He been selling narcotics to the boys and girls, and he had illegal weapons, and nobody saw that. So that's the pain. You know, the whole history. So open up your eyes and ears, folks.
But Conny, that is also what you were scratching on the surface. Was he, what he is involved in was not as a private person, just his hobby, I would say, his dirty little secret. We're talking about, we're getting into these networks again with pedophile trafficking, arms stealing, all kinds of horrific things, and that is why your nose, as sensitive as it is, became a major problem, because you would not back down, and you proved yourself over the years, I am not backing down, kill me, doesn't matter, I will not back down. And this is why they started fearing you and threw everything at you. I mean, they were using the heavy artillery, and you're still standing, even smiling. So I really salute you. I mean, really, it takes a real warrior for truth and honesty and beauty to be able to deal with it like you have dealt with it, I think.
Thank you. It warms my heart because, you know, during these years, and when it finally came to the light and truth that SS have done all these terrible things and nobody believed me, you know, all of my colleagues, hundreds of my colleagues, nobody I confirmed that. There's only one colleague who said, Conan, you were right. You know, one colleague has said that because they have now guilt of not doing anything. Mm-hmm. They have guilt of not trusting me. But it's not this. I'm not accusing them. I'm not putting blame. But it's a good lesson for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so today when I meet a lot of colleagues, you know, ex-colleague policemen, they have still this guilt inside of them. How could this happen in front of our eyes? Well, it's happened all the time.
Yeah, but also that they turned their back on you. I mean, that must be a heavy feeling, not having the stamina or courage to stand up for your friend and colleague, because I'm sure some of them must have known that there's something very wrong going on here, but not having the courage to be, and the inner power to stand up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see that the major problem everywhere, in police, but also in the society, there are the gray masses of the not doing things who can easily stop a few bad people. So we need to really inform, like you do, Ulle, you're doing a great job. I'm so proud of you, your job. You're such a brave person, and also teaching people how to investigate themselves. You're doing a world better with your job, with your work.
And also, the main thing for me is to maybe show that, just like you, there is a way to let go of fear. And it is when you are fearless that you become more secure, that it's safer for you actually to, instead of people say run away when there's a danger, I would say face the danger without fear, and you will just solve the problem instead of just amplifying it.
Exactly. Just to accept what it is and to learn from it instead. And hold your ground, you know?
Yeah.
Not choose fear. Choose the kindness, the love and understanding instead. But not being backing up. You know, love and the force of doing is putting the borders. It's really important.
Mm.
If you only use love, it will be nothing. If you only use black force, it will be violence. So you have to combine love and doing action together in a good balance.
Mm.
Then you will be a responsible and loving, caring person. And that's the, as I said, the true warrior is what I think here. We all need to waking up to see the truth.
Because the thing is, it's not easy, but it's necessary.
Yes, it is life and death.
Yeah, and life will do it to you. Life will do it to you in different portions, I would say. I mean, it's not like you chose to go through this hellfire. It was attracted to you to purify you and to I see these things as boot camp, intense boot camp. And if you can handle it, fantastic. If you cannot, you will go under. But it's the choice is yours how to deal with it.
Yes, actually. Well, after being developed as a human with this tough adventure of the mafia, I can easily feel and sense other type of mafia. And after that, I just sensing this organized mafia lobby hunter organization in Sweden, who is responsible for the destruction of our wildlife in Sweden. And you know, the lobby, hunter lobby in Sweden, it's such a power structure in Sweden. Yeah. They even had the cellar of the parliament. They have a shooting range from the lobby, you know. And this lobby, it is a organization for free time, spare time. You know, it's like a football team or something. They have 52 million every year from the society giving to them.
Mm-hmm.
52 million because they can just continue with their hobby. It's like shooting animals for fun. And there is no other organization who have got this so much money for and they have also a kind of authority mission to educate wildlife in Sweden. So mm-hmm. it's really corrupt. And they're changing the laws here also with this lobbying. And that makes Sweden one of the most gone owners in Sweden, or in world. Sweden is one of the most gone owners in the world because of the hunter lobby. There are like 300,000 hunters, and every hunter can have up to 6 guns.
Mm.
And they are everywhere in society, in the politician society, and in the lower rank in the politicians out in the regions in Sweden.
Mm.
And also it goes to the Freemasonry, because in history, the hunter culture has always been around the Freemason, the king, and the dukes and the higher society. So it's so connected with this leading upper class.
Mm. Listen, Conny, we're coming to the end of this show. I've got two questions that I normally ask my guests. And one of them, I hope you won't be offended, but in these days, there's so many areas of truth that is being infiltrated. and where some people are controlled opposition. I mean, looking at one thing, but actually working for a different. So my question to all my guests are, how can we know that you are not controlled opposition?
You can't know.
No?
No. That's a challenge. And what I want you to investigate is your own senses. I want you to understand yourself. Don't trust anything, anyone. Trust your own senses and look for the answer. No, look for the questions, not answers. Continue to investigate. And take responsibility for your own information. So don't trust anything. Don't trust me. Investigate yourself by this Apache methodology, by confirming, excluding, knowing by your own senses, and never assume. And that will get you much more aware and secure and balanced.
Excellent. And then the very last question is, how do you see the future?
Right. I think 2017 is the brightest year ever. And I see 2017 as the year of truth coming through. And I feel it and I see so much and I'm so positive. It will be a lot of challenges, of course, but I'm convinced that this will be so good for all of us. And by choosing trust and balance and love instead of fear, we will finally go through these really, really hard changes we need to do on this planet. From the few people who are controlling and manipulating the whole world, and letting the larger masses actually be involved again. To be much more alive again, from zombies that we have become, to be alive like children. I love that we will be grown up children again, to be more playful like you, playful, happy and serious and loving.
Excellent. Listen, Conor, I really want to thank you really from my heart for spending this time with us. And if you could please, once again, just let people know how to get in touch with you, how to support you in your efforts and so on.
My website is www.trackerschool.se or www.tracker.one. You will find me and my email and information, and I will love to train all of you as I track it.
Yeah, just so the listeners know that you are having a tracker course in Sweden on a regular basis, but also we have started opening up doors for you in Spain, where you will do and I'm totally convinced that if there is any possibility to do it in other countries like the UK or wherever people would be interested, if they can just contact you and see if how to set these things up and let more and more people learn from these incredible skills that are so important to all of us.
Absolutely. Just contact me and we will solve it. And I will come to whichever country you will want me to come.
That's fantastic. Conny, I'm going to invite you back shortly regarding this case, the Lisa Holm murder case, which is a very infamous case in Sweden, but where somebody totally innocent, in my opinion, has been sentenced to life imprisonment. And I, for one, want to get him out and find the real people who are behind this, because it's a massive cover-up. Where a very beautiful young being had to sacrifice her life, and it's not okay just to leave it the way it is. We need to solve this. So it's going to be my great joy to invite you back shortly, and until then, thank you, Conny, and I hope everybody enjoyed the show.
Thank you, Willa, and I love your work.
Thank you so much for listening to Light on Conspiracies, the place where truth and love transcend the darkness. Take care and see you soon.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize.
Coup d'etat in slow motion. Connecting the dots between the assassinations of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, JFK, Robert Kennedy, and John Lennon. Now available on Amazon and lightonconspiracies.com. Coup d'etat in slow motion.